ahead, and Caden and Davian both faltered. Ash's heart skipped a beat when she saw their expressions.
"That's the entrance to seclusion?"
They had told her about it, about how dangerous it was. Davian had said it was where Gassandrid claimed Fessy had died. Asha had known it was the truth as soon as he'd described it. She'd read Fessy's visions, and Davian's description of the place had been too similar for it to be a coincidence. From what he'd explained, Fessy must have recognized her surroundings while they were in prison, panicked, and run. Directly into seclusion. Directly to her death. Another twinge of sadness threatened Asha's focus, but she shook her head to herself, not letting it take root. That was getting easier and easier, in a way. There was so much for which she wanted to grieve, one more thing barely seemed to make a difference at the moment. The gate swung open at Caden's touch, and they slipped inside, Caden making certain to close it again before beckoning them silently on. The streets here were physically no different from those in the main part of the city, but there was a true sense of abandonment here, a menacing stillness that was heavier and darker than elsewhere in Ilshan Gathdelteth. Twice they had to take shelter in nearby buildings and cloak themselves, using a mixture of Khan and essence, watching silently as strange, terrifying-looking wolves stalked past, almost as big as horses, their eyes eerily intelligent as they scanned from side to side. An ugly, black rot covered them in patches, and through it Asha could see raw flesh and white ribs peeking through. Caden didn't know what the creatures were exactly, but there was no doubting they were dangerous. They pressed on, Caden leading them to a house outwardly no different from any of the surrounding ones. Once inside, he walked directly into a small side room and stooped, hands pressing against the wall. Stone shifted, and a metal box glimmered below. Caden removed it, glancing at Davian.
"I hated using this," he told him.
"I know," said Davian quietly.
He caught Asha's confused glance and smiled at her, though the expression held sadness.
"Any vessels you see in this place were paid for in blood," he said softly. "The blood of people we knew."
Asha laid a hand on his arm, squeezing gently. Caden trickled essence into the top of the box. The edges glowed blue, and the top slid aside, revealing several hourglass-like containers. Two swirled with the yellow glow of essence, and a third throbbed with the energy as well, though dully in comparison. Asha studied the three signatures intently, the differences among them, the rates at which they pulsed, the slight variations in color and intensity, obvious to her now. The other containers appeared to be empty. Caden froze as he took in the sight.
"That cannot be right," he muttered.
"What is it?" asked Asha.
"Seer," Caden pointed to one of the dark vials. "This should be glowing, too."
"Could he be shielding himself from it somehow?" Davian asked.
"No. Essence," Caden shook his head. "Essence is life. It is inextricably linked to the one from whom it came until it decays. Shielding or shapeshifting or going through the chamber could all prevent it from being used to find him. But this..."
He stared at the vial in disbelief, shaking it slightly as if that would somehow force the essence to reawaken.
"This says he is dead."
"Isn't that what we want?"
"Yes, but..."
Caden shook his head dazedly.
"It's not possible. He hasn't been anywhere near Lycanius."
There was silence, and then Caden grimaced.
"Nothing to be done about it," he observed, replacing the vial,
and then pocketing the one that glowed dully. He handed the two that were brightly lit to Davian.
"Diara and Gassandrid. But start with Diara. We need to get to her before Garrodus's ward wears off."
Davian nodded, carefully unstopping the vial. Tiny cracks ran along the glass as essence abruptly broke free,
swirling around Davian's hand, darting between his fingers, pulsing and straining as if trying to escape his grasp. Asha watched in fascination. The essence should be swiftly decaying, but the vessel within Davian was clearly preventing that, using it instead to lead him toward its source. "She's close," said Davian after a moment, surprise in his tone. "Here in seclusion." Caden thought, then grunted.
"Of course," he sighed. "I think I know where we need to go. Don't let that essence decay. We're going to need it."
They set off again through the deserted streets. Twice more they had to conceal themselves from the massive, rotting wolves. One appeared to have spotted them, but Davian briefly encapsulated them in a time bubble, and they were soon several streets over with no sign of pursuit. Caden eventually guided them to another stairwell leading down into the earth. From Davian's expression, he recognized this one. They descended silently, every muscle tense. The others didn't have to say anything for her to understand that they might encounter resistance at any moment now. They reached the bottom, and Asha's step stuttered as she took in the passageway of essence-lit, shining steel that stretched out in front of them.
"Each plate is a vessel," explained Davian as they started forward. "It can be moved and reconfigured individually, but it's also part of a much larger whole. One designed to hold back the effects of the time distortion coming from Zavalar."
Asha could hear the begrudging note of respect in his tone.
"If it hadn't cost thousands of lives, I'd probably say it was quite brilliant."
They came to a seemingly arbitrary point in the hallway, and Davian eased to a stop, staring down at his hand.
"She's close now. Somewhere that way."
He gestured at the wall to their left. Caden acknowledged the statement and placed his hand against the steel plate.
"I'm going to take a little extra essence from you," he warned Asha.
The steel flashed blue and the hallway transformed. Asha watched in astonishment as steel snapped away and together again, plates moving at blinding, terrifying speeds as they shifted smoothly in a balletic, kaleidoscopic dance of motion and crackling blue light. Within seconds, a new hallway stretched out before them.
"This way," said Caden, striding forward.
Asha exchanged a glance with Davian, who shrugged and followed. They walked the newly formed corridor for another minute before more glimmering metal up ahead signaled a dead end. Caden paused at the blockage, nodding to Davian's hand.
"You need to release that into the steel," he said.
Davian grunted, recognition in his eyes as he pressed his hand against the door.
"This was one of the rooms blocking my way earlier. I thought they might be keyed to an essence signature."
The power swirling around his fingers dissipated, sucked into the metal. Nothing happened for a long moment, and then the steel slid smoothly aside. The three of them entered the room beyond warily, though there was no sign of any resistance from within. Asha was surprised to find the space warmly decorated, homey even. Rugs covered the steel on the floor. One plate on the wall pulsed bright with essence, apparently providing heat for the room as well as the warm, fire-like light. Well-read books lined the shelves. The large, comfortable-looking bed in the corner was occupied, and Asha didn't have to look closely to recognize Diara's form. The woman breathed regularly, her expression peaceful. Only the telltale glow of essence flowing from a nearby plate into her body gave away the fact that she wasn't simply taking a nap. Caden didn't hesitate. He walked over to the bed, drew Lycanius, and pushed it carefully, almost gently, through Diara's heart. Asha looked away, skin crawling. No matter the necessity of what they were doing, no matter what Diara had done, there was no getting away from the quiet ugliness of the act. Davian, she noticed, continued to watch, a profound sorrow in his expression.
"Don't feel too sad for her, Dev," Asha murmured.
Davian shook his head.
"It's not for her."
Asha turned back, falling silent as she watched Caden leaning forward, resting against the hilt of the blade, head bowed over the corpse.
His body shook with silent sobs. Finally, he murmured something before straightening, gently drawing Lycanius out of Diara's chest, wiping the blade solemnly before sheathing it again.
It's done.
Caden looked at them tiredly, and Asher could see the toll that simple act had taken on him. He picked up Diara's limp hand, displaying a ring on her index finger.
This was a Siliar's Dokken key. Diara must have modified it to access mine. She always was brilliant, he finished softly.
He was about to move back toward the entrance when he paused, spotting something sitting on the desk to the side. He walked over, shaking his head slightly, and reached down, wordlessly displaying what he'd picked up to Asha and Davian. Asha stared, nonplussed, as she recognized the silver ring, the one she had given to Davian so long ago. To her side, Davian smiled ruefully.
They took it off me the day I was taken prisoner, he explained.
He held out his hand. Caden hesitated, then shook his head and pocketed the vessel instead.
I'll hang on to it for now.
He shrugged at Davian's expression.
You don't go back until you have it, so...
Davian grunted. Good point. Asha watched the exchange mutely, heart-wrenching as it always did when she was reminded of what was coming. Caden had taken the ring from Davian's corpse. She had seen it herself. So if Davian didn't have it, it meant he couldn't go back in time just yet. That was entirely fine by her.
We need to find Cassandra now, said Caden.
He drew out another vial of essence, the dull, lifeless one, and handed it to Davian.
See what you can do.
Davian opened the vial, letting the energy dance around his fingers once again. This time, though, the essence seemed sluggish, lethargic. Nobody spoke as Davian closed his eyes, focusing.
They are, he gestured vaguely, everywhere. Scattered. A couple of pulses nearby, but others, I can barely feel them.
They're not in Talon Gol, of that much I'm certain. He paused. Though there is a group of them still together, somewhere to the south. Caden rubbed his face.
He's gone to Dalanus then, he said, sounding unsurprised.
You thought this would happen? Asked Asha.
Yes, once the boundary fell, it's what I expected, Caden admitted morosely. So we go to Dylanus. We're going to need to go there anyway to stop Shemaloth from getting in, and to...
He gave Davian an apologetic look. Asha's breath caught, and she gripped Davian's hand almost on instinct. He squeezed back, the gesture both a reassurance and a search for comfort.
It's likely that Shemaloth will have found a way to tell him that Lycanius is a threat again, too, even if they're assuming I'm dead. Caden continued. Cassandra will be heading for Dylanus regardless. He believes that he's getting sent back, and that can't happen from anywhere else. But if he spots us coming, he won't stay there for long.
Davian nodded slowly. I'll let you make the gate, he said, a small smile shared between the two men, speaking of an inside joke.
We'll have to detour past the tributary, too, Caden added, almost as an afterthought.
Asha frowned. Why?
We can take that linking vessel from Tenvar. Use it to maintain the flow of essence between us instead. If you have no objections, Caden added.
He shrugged at her expression.
We'll leave Tenvar himself with the shadows. He'll be no worse off than he was at the toll. But we are going to need to separate eventually, and Dylanus is one place where I cannot afford to run out of essence. If it comes down to a fight, I'm going to need strength, not just con. And you, he said significantly, are going to need everything extra you can get to maintain an Ilshara around all of Dylanus. That's the only way left to keep Shemaloth out now.
Asha stared at him blankly.
What?
She shook her head.
I don't know how to do that.
I've seen what you can do, Ashalia.
Caden spoke almost cheerfully, his words full of confidence. Don't worry. You're more than capable of this. Davian touched a hand to her arm. I'll be there to help where I can, too, he assured her. The responsibility settled heavy on Asher's shoulders, but she nodded. There weren't any other options left to them now, anyway.
So we sneak in, kill Cassandrid. I create this Ilshara over the entire city to hold back Shemaloth, she repeated faintly. What then?
Caden slipped his hand into his pocket, pulling out the last vial. He stared for a long moment at the dancing energy within.
Then we end this, he said softly.
Chapter 49 Weir groaned, every part of his body feeling as though it were on fire as he groggily came awake. What had happened to him? His mind struggled to catch up. They had been fighting the Desrealites for days. They had been losing. That desperate, futile last stand, knowing he was going to die. And then? His eyes snapped open, his breathing shallow and panicked. The columns!
Be easy, murmured a deep, unfamiliar voice to his right.
He twisted to find a stranger sitting across the campfire from his prone position on the ground, perched atop a log and watching him intently. It was night, stars glittering through the haze of wood smoke, though Weir thought he could see the last vestiges of dusk still fading in the west. They seemed to be high up. Weir could hear the sounds of other people somewhere farther below, but the edge of the campsite's small plateau blocked his view downward. The crackling fire lit the stranger's face a ruddy red. His skin was pale, nose sharp, hair braided in an unusual pattern. Weir struggled to place it for a moment. Then he tensed.
You're Niskian? He croaked.
I am Niskian, replied the stranger calmly.
His grasp of the Andaran language, shared by all countries north of the mountains of Alai, was surprisingly good, with very little of the thick, slurring accent that Weir had come to expect from someone native to Nesk.
And you are Andaran. But today, at least, I will not hold that against you.
The man spoke lightly. Weir's eyes narrowed, feeling certain that the Neskian was making sport of him. He blinked, trying to clear his head.
Who are you? Where are we?
His heart pounded almost as hard as his head.
How long have I been unconscious?
The man raised a hand in a warning gesture, a small smile on his lips.
I am called Ankelot. We are not far from where we found you, but you have been asleep for nearly a day. You are very badly injured, Don. Do not try to move.
Shock made Weir struggle to sit, despite Ankelot's warning.
The Desrealites, he gasped.
Have stopped their advance. We are holding them.
You're not holding them, Weir said desperately. They are exactly where they want to be.
Ankelot looked at him as if he thought Weir wasn't fully conscious yet, but he was stopped from saying anything more by a feminine voice behind him.
Weir?
Weir's heart beat faster. He turned slowly, fearful to find that his ears had deceived him. Dizia stood at the edge of the fire, looking at him with light in her eyes. He stared open-mouthed as she grinned at him. Suddenly she was on her knees by his side, embracing him so tightly that only the fact that it was her stopped him from flinching away as his already sore ribs creaked. He held her dazedly.
What? How?
He whispered. Dizia laughed, though it was choked off by what sounded like a small sob.
It's a long story.
She kissed him, and he returned it eagerly, ignoring Ankelot's presence. Eventually, he heard a half-awkward, half-annoyed cough from over Dizia's shoulder, and he reluctantly pulled away again. At some point, Ankelot had left, and another figure, this one familiar, had taken his place.
Aelric?
Weir felt another grin split his features as he recognized the young man standing across the fire. He looked older by much more than the year or so since Weir had seen him, body leaner and harder than it had been. He was clothed in unusual-looking black sleeves and gloves.
Fates, it's good to see you.
Weir had long regretted his decision to let Aelric leave, to not tell Dizia about it until it was too late. Seeing him here, alive and apparently well, was a genuine moment of joy and relief. Aelric hesitated, then smiled back.
"Good to see you as well, Torin," he said, though the strange tension in his stance didn't ease. "You look like you're recovering."
He cast a wry eye at his sister, who blushed. Weir tested his limbs one by one, stretching stiff muscles and probing at bruises.
"I can fight."
A jolt of concern ran through him. He scrambled to his feet, ignoring the pain.
"What about everyone else?"
Aelric shook his head.
"You, Taerys, and a few others were the only lucky ones."
"Taerys made it?"
"He hasn't woken up yet, but the healers say he'll pull through."
Weir closed his eyes, exhaling. He'd already known that casualties would be high, but Taerys's surviving was wonderful news.
"The Destrialites. What's happening?"
Aelric shrugged.
"We withdrew a little way, decided to get our bearings before starting anything. Why in fates were you fighting back there? Why didn't you retreat?"
"Do you have eyes on them?"
Weir asked, not bothering to hide the tension in his tone.
"Yes, of course," Aelric said slowly. "Scouts are rotating out every hour, but so far none have reported any signs of them advancing. If anything, they seem entirely content to stay where they are. They've even set up some sort of structure in the middle of their camp."
Weir felt a chill.
"Black columns?"
"Yes."
Elric's gaze turned sharp as he saw Weir's expression.
"What are they?"
"Vessels. And if they activate them, everyone and everything for several hundred miles will be dead within a day."
Weir rubbed his face, ignoring Dizia's and Aelric's shocked expressions, trying to get his bearings. He desperately wanted to ask Dizia where she'd been, whether she was well, how circumstances had brought her here. But there simply wasn't time.
"These people you're with, Neskians? Are you in charge?"
Aelric coughed.
"Not exactly."
"We have Warlord Aemar's ear,"
added Dizia quickly.
"But they're sort of allies, I suppose."
She looked to Aelric for help, but he just shrugged ruefully. Weir frowned.
"Warlord? There's a Neskian warlord here?"
There were only four of those in all of Nesk. It was the highest position in their country. Weir watched the others' faces, then turned and walked toward the edge of the small plateau, heart sinking.
"Wait!"
Aelric held a hand out as if to stop him with the motion, wincing as he did so. Weir reached the edge, staring in disbelief at the scene below.
"There have to be 1,000 troops down there,"
he whispered, blood turning cold. Campfires stretched away deep into the approaching valley, each one surrounded by men in distinctive red and black uniforms.
1,000 Neskian troops. "Surprise," said Dizia weakly. "How? Why?"
Weir ran a hand through his hair, calculating.
"Wait, this was the invasion force we kept getting reports about? How did you know to come here, of all places? How did you get here so fast?"
"Seer," said Aelric. "He's one of the Venerate."
"Was,"
corrected Dizia, sadness flickering briefly across her features.
"And we are able to move our troops swiftly. That is all you need to know."
The new voice cut through the air behind Dizia and Aelric. Weir turned to see Ankalat standing at the edge of the fire, having apparently materialized from nowhere. The handsome young man was watching Weir intently, and Weir got the distinct impression that his gaze was a disapproving one. A moment later, Ankalat's gaze switched to Dizia, and Weir suddenly thought he knew why. He resisted the irrational, jealous feeling of insecurity that stirred in his chest.
"We will pose no threat to your country, and my father has agreed to help turn back the Destrialite invasion," continued Ankalat. "So long as you can guarantee the peaceful transfer of ownership of Lord Aelric's land, now that he is a citizen of Nesk."
What?
Weir shook his head in confusion, glancing across at Aelric.
A Neskian citizen?
Believe me, that's not the strangest thing that's happened, Dizia assured Weir, laying a hand gently on his arm. As I said, long story. We're still with you, she added softly, quietly enough that the other two couldn't hear the words.
Weir gestured in frustration.
I can't just cede Andoran land to Nesk. I don't have that kind of authority.
Not only was there no time for nonsense like this, but Aelric didn't officially have any land yet, even if the paperwork was technically underway.
As second in line to the throne, your word will be enough for my father, Ankalot assured him calmly. The rest is detail.
Weir felt a pang of grief as he thought of his uncle.
Heir, actually.
What?
Dizia and Aelric both spoke at once, and Weir met their gazes, shaking his head.
Uncle didn't make it out of Ilinilan, he explained heavily, watching as shock and sadness crept over their expressions. Kevrin had been like a father to them.
What? What about Caroline?
Asked Dizia, voice threatening to crack.
I don't know, admitted Weir.
She was in the north when the city was attacked. Hopefully by now she's had the sense to head to Prythe.
There was silence, and then Dizia and Aelric both nodded, a fresh, cheerless resolve pasted on their faces. Weir nodded back. He knew that look. Grieve later.
Weir turned to Ankalat.
When can I speak with Warlord Aemar? If he wants this deal, then it needs to be now.
This was the least terrible of his terrible options, and there was simply no time to argue or negotiate. He needed the Neskian army, and he needed it immediately. As if on cue, Ankalat produced a document and pen with a flourish, laying them flat against the smooth surface of a nearby shield and gesturing expansively.
No need. Sign, and our men are yours to command until the Desraelites have been defeated.
Weir restrained a scowl. He was quickly coming to the conclusion that he didn't like the man, and strode over, scanning the paper quickly. It was in the Andoran language and seemed to all be in order, though he knew it didn't really matter. Right now, he would have agreed to a treaty handing over half of Andorra if it meant stopping the Desraelites. Exhaling heavily, he signed, then handed the document back to Ankalat.
Are we done? He asked coldly.
We are done, Ankalat assured him.
Then get your people ready. We don't have much time.
Weir stumbled a little as he made to move. Dizia gave him an appraising look.
Are you up to this?
Weir grunted.
Well, we could ask the Desraelites to wait a few days and let me recover, but...
Dizia held up her hands as Aelric gave him a slight grin.
All right.
She moved over next to him, offering him her shoulder to lean on. He took it gratefully.
Let's go and help our new friends figure out how close we all are to dying, he said grimly.
Weir crept along the heavily treed ridge, every tired muscle tense, dry leaves crunching faintly underfoot as he made certain to follow exactly where the Neskian scout ahead of him trod. They were far enough from the Desraelite camp that they didn't expect to be spotted, but the Gilshar had set up an array of traps along their perimeter. Another gift from the Venerate, apparently. The devices dissolved anyone who stepped on them in a burning flash of essence, which also served to reliably indicate the position of anyone accompanying the unfortunate victim. The Neskians had swiftly learned to watch for the vessels, but the devices were usually half-buried, often covered over with leaves and brush. It would be easy enough for even the most skilled scout to miss one. That level of preparedness didn't bode well for their chances of a counterattack, no matter how many soldiers Dizia had brought. The scout who had been chosen to accompany them, a slight man with two fingers missing on his left hand, motioned them forward. The thick, prickly foliage of the mountainside scratched at Weir as he pushed his way cautiously through, the sounds of soldiers' voices echoing up to him now. He came to a halt beside Dizia as they reached a protruding section of the ridge that would give them a clear view of the encampment below. He wormed forward the final few feet so as not to reveal himself to any guards, paling as he finally got a good look at the Desraelites. The columns were arranged in a ring, and all upright. His breath caught. Though the ground looked uneven where the massive black pillars stood, they appeared stable, surrounding something on the ground that Weir was certain hadn't been there before. A circle of obsidian, he thought. Deep lines cut into it to form some sort of image. It must have been covered over by dirt and grass before, and the Desrealites had cleared it all away. Weir squinted, then felt a chill as he realized that he was looking at it upside down. It was a wolf's head. Caden's symbol. The symbol of the boundary.
"That has to be the Serrarium," he whispered urgently to Dizia. He'd already explained the column's purpose during their short journey here. "And it looks to me as if they're ready to destroy it. We need to attack. Now!"
Dizia glanced at him, and he could see the hesitation in her eyes. He couldn't blame her. He was asking her to throw men and women at certain death. She finally gave a short nod.
"Ankalat will have them ready to move by now. Stay here. You'll just slow us down," she murmured.
There was no judgment to the words, just simple truth. He was far too weak to move swiftly.
10 minutes.
She motioned to the scout, and the two of them hurried off. Weir watched them vanish into the forest, and then turned back to the scene at the bottom of the long, steep incline, heart in his throat. The Desrealites moved like ants below, swarming around the columns, a fascinated audience as well as defense. Even from here, Weir could feel their anticipation. He tensed as he spotted the crowd making way for several men who were striding confidently toward the center of the ring. Once there, they turned to face the assembled soldiers. After a few moments, Weir could hear projected voices floating up to him, though he couldn't make out the words. A speech of some kind. That didn't bode well. He glanced in the direction from which he knew the Neskians would need to attack, willing them to appear even though Dizia had been gone for only a couple of minutes. He stared longingly for a few seconds before his gaze was dragged back to the columns. Something was happening. A crimson light was creeping from one pillar to the next along the edge of the obsidian circle, almost invisible at first but thickening, like a rivulet of blood-red lava. A cheer, 1,000 voices raised in joyous celebration, echoed up to him. The columns were being activated.
"No,"
he whispered, scrambling to his feet, suddenly not caring if he was seen.
"No, no, no!"
The red light continued to crawl along the ground, spreading outward from the first column, inexorably encircling the wolf's head. Shots of anticipation made their way to his ears, as if the unlooking Desrealites were at a race and urging the light onward toward the finish line. Weir felt his breath getting short as a low, unsettling thrum began to emanate from the black pillars, the sound increasing each time one was touched by the red energy. The process had taken only minutes so far. Weir shifted, again looking back in the direction of the Neskian camp, willing soldiers to appear. He knew it was a vain hope. Dizia would barely have reached the camp at a dead sprint, let alone been able to mobilize a large force so quickly. He steeled himself and stood, gathering all the essence he had left in his reserve, focused on the Gilshar leaders standing triumphantly among the columns, bathed in the eerie red glow. He knew this wouldn't do much. It was token at best. But perhaps, somehow, it would delay what was happening. He unleashed. His bolt of essence sped downward, a blinding, twisting, molten beam of light. 100 feet from the closest column, it vanished. Weir sank to the ground, the strength gone from his limbs. Many of the soldiers looked up at the flash, spotted him. A few pointed and laughed. None seemed worried enough about him to even try to climb the slope. Weir struggled to his feet again, the ache of his previous injuries suddenly feeling far worse now that he was drained of essence. What else could he do? He took one staggering step, then another down the hill. The soldiers who had initially noticed him had already turned back to the spectacle in front of them, ignoring him as they joined their voices to the roar of approval. A nightmarishly long minute passed as he stumbled downward, but his body simply hadn't had enough time to recover. What was left of his reserve was going to simply keeping him from collapsing. He was running a race against that cursed creeping red light now, but he had known from the beginning that it was one he would lose. Before he was even halfway down, the red line joined back to the first column, the circle complete.
There was a screaming sound, like metal being torn apart by some great force. A thunderous crack as the obsidian wolf's head began to fracture, then break apart. A white pillar of essence, like nothing we had ever seen, screamed into the sky. He gasped, rolling away and collapsing against the hillside, pain tearing at his eyes as the afterimage left him blind for several seconds. As the initial shock passed, he cupped his hand over his eyes, shielding them as he peered down below at the starkly lit Desrealites. Most were on the ground and clutching at their faces, apparently having anticipated the explosion of energy as little as we're. The intensity of the light was already fading as the columns seemed to suck in the glow, the low thrumming pressing hard against Weir's ears and twisting his stomach into a knot. The pillar of energy bled gradually from white to a deep, ugly crimson. The chanting and cheering of the Desrealites had petered out into a stunned hush. Weir couldn't see what had happened to the Gilshar leaders who had been standing in the middle of the columns. He hoped fervently that they hadn't moved. Suddenly there was shouting, panicked yells echoing up to Weir. He rolled into a seated position, squinting down as a starkly lit flood of bodies crashed out of the forest, a wave that smashed into the dazed Desrealites. The Neskians had arrived. They threw themselves into battle with a ferocity and willingness that shocked Weir. The Desrealites, still stunned by the light, didn't counter well. Not with any sense of organization, certainly. But with the light at their backs, a significant advantage given how bright it was, they did enough to hold, resisting the initial Neskian surge toward the columns. The entire scene was bathed in garish red now, matching the color spraying upward from combatants' bodies as blades and spears slashed wildly into flesh. Weir dragged himself to his feet once again and scrambled down the steep hillside as fast as he could, blade out. He would barely make an impact, but he was also painfully aware that it was the best option available to him. The Serrarium was emptying rapidly, and Caden had explained exactly what would happen after the columns had drained it. They had to stop that device. He was almost to the fighting when he saw the Neskian soldier. He was wearing telesthesia, but it was unlike any set of the armor Weir had seen before. The scales that made up its plates looked distinctly red, not black, as they glittered against the bloody dying light of the broken Serrarium. The helmet had a slit for eyes, and a different symbol from the blinds was inscribed across it. Weir couldn't quite make it out, but it wasn't the wavy lines within a circle, of that much he was certain. The Neskians quickly ducked aside as the warrior strode forward, an enormous blade, red too, Weir thought, though it was hard to tell in the crimson light, held aloft in his hand. It looked like a broadsword, far too big for one-handed use, and yet as the soldier reached the front lines, he swung smoothly. Wherever he made contact, the enemy just disintegrated. Weir watched in mute shock as the swordsman crashed through his opponents. The Desrealites surged against him, but he simply plowed on, every motion fluid and every deadly strike flowing gracefully onto the next. He danced between them and through them, a glimmering light among a flickering sea of raging enemies, moving ever closer to the nearest of the columns. The red essence had dimmed to a dull glow now, making it hard to follow exactly what was happening. Weir stuttered to a stop, watching, barely daring to hope. Behind him, filling the space cleared by the soldier in red, a group of Neskian soldiers flowed, their blades flashing in a dance almost as balletic as their champions, carving a protective space around the man in telesthesia. And then, suddenly, impossibly, the soldier was there, alone, in the tiniest of pockets with one of the columns. The Desrealite army saw him, raged and surged and attacked with red-tinged fury, and somehow the Neskians protecting their warrior held. The soldier in red drew back his fist and punched the column. There was an odd sound, a whining echo as if the thrumming had been disrupted for just a moment. But the column didn't move. The red light was almost gone now, fading so that everything was left in murk, barely tinged with crimson. Only the initial red ring linking the columns remained bright. The screams began. Weir's blood froze at the sound as almost everyone on the battlefield faltered. He stared in horror.
Those immediately next to the columns were disintegrating, just like the blind had in Ilinilon when Caden had used Lycanius. They tore desperately at their skin, but it shredded off, the sight somehow more horrific in the disturbing light. The soldier in red still stood, somehow, but everyone else around him was falling, dying. Weir's blood turned to ice as the whispering began, a susurrus that swept across the battlefield, mingling with the screams of the dying, wordless and menacing and hungry. Formless, dark shapes, somehow darker than the shadows, began to emerge from the columns. Hands reached out and began grasping greedily at the dying, caressing, pulling at skin and bone as it fell away. A ripple of stillness swept outward as the fighting faltered to a stop, combatants from both sides watching in uncontained horror. And then only the soldier in red still stood in the space around the columns, dark forms drifting and whispering all around him. He drew back his fist and punched again. Again the strange disharmony in the thrum, but again nothing changed. He punched again, 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 as the effect of the columns began to spread, more soldiers from both sides falling, the whispering getting louder. People started backing away, then fleeing, a sudden flood away from the oncoming wall of death. Some fell and were trampled as the fear and desperation reached a crescendo. Another punch, and a chip of black stone, visible even from this distance, flew away from the pillar. Weir just stood there, too tired to run, fortunately still in an elevated position and out of the path most were taking. He knew that there was no outrunning what was coming. So instead he watched, the tiniest flicker of hope in his chest. With a scream, the lone soldier punched again and again and one more time. Weir watched in shock as the red armor on his arm shattered on the last blow, falling away. There was nothing underneath, no flesh. The soldier stumbled backward, falling to the ground, clearly spent. Weir's heart sank. There was a creaking, cracking sound. The column trembled. A shrieking sound filled the air as the whispering shadows that had been emerging wailed. The pillar began to crumble around the base, right at the point at which the soldier had been striking. Weir watched wide-eyed as it leaned, and then slowly, impossibly, toppled, snapping with a crack that echoed around the hills before thundering to the ground in a cloud of crimson-tinged dust. The glowing red ring on the ground winked out. The thrum increased for a brief second into a harsh, dissonant, screeching note, and then vanished, leaving only the echoes of crashing stone as chunks of the column tumbled away. Weir just stood and watched, not daring to believe what he was witnessing, breath coming in short gasps as the sound rumbled away into the surrounding hills. And then there was silence. Dawn was brightening the horizon when Weir finally found Ditzia again. Something eased in his chest as he spotted her, deep in discussion with two soldiers outside one of the Neskian tents. He'd had no reason to believe that she had put herself on the front lines of the assault on the columns, but knowing her, it also wouldn't have surprised him. He hurried toward her, rewarded with a smile of joy and relief as Ditzia spotted him.
Weir!
She flung her arms around him, pulling him close for several seconds. He held her back slightly and kissed her, eliciting a couple of whistles from the surrounding men. They both ignored them. Finally they broke apart, Ditzia still grinning.
"You need to stop making me think you're dead," she said a little giddily.
Weir laughed. "Let's both try to do better on that front." He glanced around. The camp appeared fairly orderly, all things considered.
"How many did they lose?"
"Enough."
Ditzia's smile faded.
"Not as many as the Gilshar, but those vessels."
She trailed off, shivering.
"You were there? You saw?"
Ditzia nodded.
"I saw," she repeated softly. "So the boundary will be gone."
Weir's stomach twisted as he said the words,
as if admitting it finally made it real. And if what Caden says is true, Shemaloth himself will be marching on Dilanus now.
Dizia shuddered.
Once I would have laughed at anyone who told me that, but after last night, I can believe it.
They remained silent, and then Dizia beckoned to Weir.
We should discuss what happens next. Ankalat will be waiting.
Weir followed Dizia as she confidently navigated the camp, impressed with how at ease she seemed to be here, among what were ostensibly enemy soldiers. For himself, Weir couldn't help but eye every armed man who walked past warily.
Is Aelric all right? He eventually asked pensively. He's alive.
Dizia's expression betrayed her concern.
Badly injured, though. Taerys is doing what he can for him, as are some of Warlord Aemar's best physicians. He'll be gloating about how he saved us all in no time, she concluded, though Weir wasn't sure whether she was confident or just trying to convince herself.
He frowned.
What do you mean, saved us all? Well, you saw what he did, destroying that column,
said Dizia, glancing across in surprise.
Weir's mind went blank. The soldier in red? He said slowly. That was Aelric? Aelric? Your brother Aelric? He clarified somewhat unnecessarily.
Dizia smiled slightly as she ushered him toward a tent that was slightly larger than those around it.
I told you. Long story.
Their conversation came to a halt as they approached the two men standing at attention in front of the entrance. The guards stepped aside respectfully when they spotted Dizia, though neither man bothered to hide his glare as Weir ducked inside with her, still reeling as he processed the new information. The inside of the tent was spacious. Several desks were set up along the side, and soldiers were poring over a map on another one in the center. Ankalat was slouched tiredly on a chair nearby, an older man in the process of binding a wound to his shoulder. He used his free hand to lazily wave Weir and Dizia over when he spotted them.
"Prince Thorin," he said, his gaze assessing. "I am glad to see that you survived. Now that Nesk's side of the bargain has been fulfilled, it will be much better to have your word to back up your signature."
Weir felt his expression harden.
"The Desrealites are far from finished," he said firmly. "They are broken, without leadership, but they could still do an untold amount of harm if they are allowed to run unchecked in Andara. And if we survive all of this, there will be war in Desriel, if they still have an army. So we need to go after them."
"You mean my men need to go after them," said Ankalat smoothly. "Which was not in our agreement. We promised to turn back the Desrielite army, and that we have delivered."
"You won a battle."
Weir was glad that he was too tired to show his emotions right now. He knew Ankalat was right. The document he had signed was technically fulfilled, but he couldn't see another option.
"I am grateful, but that wasn't the spirit in which I took the deal."
"Are you suggesting that you will not honor it?"
There was an immediate, noticeable tension in the stance of everyone nearby at the words, and Weir could see that the group of soldiers by the desk had stopped what they were doing, watching intently. He quickly calculated. 4 men, plus 2 at the door, and a wounded Ankalat. If Dizia helped, they could probably take out...
"You will do as he says, Ankalat."
There was a surprised silence as the stern voice came from the entrance to the tent. Weir turned to see Aelric propping himself up against a tired-looking Taerys, who sported an ugly new scar across his cheek but otherwise appeared healthy. Aelric, though, was deathly pale, his eyes frighteningly hollow. Weir swallowed as Dizia scrambled to assist Taerys in helping her brother inside. His gaze went to Aelric's arm, or the place where it should have been anyway. The long sleeve just hung there now. Ankalat scowled, looking thrown by the interruption.
"My father... Your father will do whatever it takes to secure that land legally. He knows that taking it, or any other Andaran land, by force,
would contravene the claim. And he's no fool. The South still has an army.
Aelric nodded gratefully to his sister as she eased him to a seated position on the floor.
But most of all, you'll do it because it is the right thing to do. And if you're not willing to accept that, then you and I will be parting ways.
Weir exchanged a silent look with Tayris, whose tiny shrug indicated he knew as little about this conversation as Weir. Ankalat's eyes darted between Weir and Aelric, concern warring with his evident desire to push the issue. Finally, though, he exhaled.
"Of course, of course,"
he stood, offering his hand to Weir.
"We will hunt down the Gilshar and end him, for the good of our country's ongoing relations."
Weir tried not to show his surprise as he grasped Ankalat's hand. Nescians were not known for negotiating on anything, really.
"But,"
added Ankalat, his eyes glittering as he refused to let go,
"I want your word. This is the last reinterpretation of the agreement. On your honor," he added seriously.
"On my honor," agreed Weir.
Ankalat studied Weir, seemingly satisfied with what he saw in Weir's expression. Then he glanced across at Aelric.
"The men would be glad to see you awake," he said roughly.
He stood and left without another word. Weir watched the abrupt departure, thrown, before turning and grinning at Tayris. The two embraced.
"Fate, sire," said Tayris with a laugh. "Between you and Davian, I will never again assume that anyone is actually dead. Ever."
Weir chuckled, then paused as he caught Tayris's meaning. Tayris's smile widened at his expression.
"The lad's still alive,"
he said, gesturing to the scar on his cheek, not hiding the relief and joy that simple statement clearly brought him.
"I can sense him again. Somewhere to the north. Talangol? Closer,"
Tayris hesitated.
"Dylanus, maybe."
Weir closed his eyes, reluctantly acknowledging the suggestion. Assuming that Davian was with Caden, that made sense. Whether to protect the city or to help Caden close the rift, it was always going to be their next destination. From what Asha had said, it was also very likely Davian's last.
"Then that's where we need to be," he said heavily. "We should leave straight away."
"You cannot get there in time to be useful," observed Aelric gently. "Not from here."
"I have this. Caden has the other,"
said Weir, holding up the white travel stone, which had miraculously stayed safe on his person throughout the past few days. He toyed with it, then turned to Ditzia.
"I know Ankalat doesn't like me overly much, but if we explained, he won't lend you any troops. Not even if you tell him that the world depends on it," said Ditzia. "Be glad that you got what you did. I've never seen him bend that much before."
Weir raised an eyebrow. "That was bending?"
"You have no idea."
Weir sighed.
"Regular soldiers probably wouldn't be of much use anyway," he mused.
He eyed Aelric.
"You, on the other hand, well, let's just say I'm looking forward to understanding exactly how you were able to save us all last night. Thanks for that, by the way."
He gave the other man a slight grin, which was quickly returned.
"We should leave soon, but if you need care first—" "We won't be coming with you, Weir,"
interrupted Ditzia gently. Weir blinked at her.
"Why not?" he said, bemused. "I assumed—" "It's complicated. But the bottom line is Ankalat will not lend you any soldiers. And that includes us. But you're not—"
Weir trailed off, understanding.
"The Nescian citizen thing. The Nescian citizen thing."
Ditzia leaned forward, taking his hand.
"Weir, you know I would come with you if I could," she said seriously, looking into his eyes. "But if I go, if Aelric goes, then Ankalat will consider your agreement with him broken.
Weir didn't respond for a second, mind racing as he tried to think of a way to get around the situation. He didn't want to leave her again. Not now. Not so soon after they had somehow, miraculously, been brought back together.
"Are you in trouble?" he asked.
"In danger if you stay? I won't." "We're not." It was Aelric, his tone confident despite his weakened state. "They're here because of us, Torin. They like us. Believe me, we're probably safer with them than we would be where you're about to go."
"And we will be allowed to leave after the deal has been completed," added Detzia.
She held his gaze.
"Once you're done helping Davian and Caden, come and find me."
Weir felt a pang in his chest as he looked at her.
"Of course."
He stared down at the white stone in his hand, then reluctantly handed it to Tayris, who looked in a significantly better state to use essence.
"We can't delay," he added softly.
He pulled in a breath, then drew the oath stone from around his neck, clutching it tightly.
"Ash," he said, picturing his friend, "I'm alive. If you're able to do so safely, tell the others that I'm coming via the travel stone in a few minutes."
If they were close to Dylanus, or really anywhere in the north, there was a chance that they were near Baines. He didn't want his arrival to surprise them at an inopportune time. He tucked the oath stone away again, ignoring the confused expressions of both Detzia and Aelric, and then wrapped Detzia in a fierce embrace.
"I have so many questions," he whispered. "You're not the only one," said Detzia, holding him tight. "So fates know you're required to be around to answer them once all of this is over."
She brushed her lips against his and stepped back, giving him a tight smile to cover the tears glistening in her eyes. Weir smiled back as Tayris began pouring essence into the travel stone. Aelric struggled to his feet and slung his arm around Detzia, though whether it was to comfort her or for his own support, Weir couldn't tell. From their expressions, though, it was obvious that they both desperately wanted to go with him, even with Aelric barely able to stand. He turned, watching as the disk of light emerging from the travel stone spun and expanded until the portal was completely open, showing a vista of open, rolling green hills on the other side. And Caden, Asha, and Davian, all staring through at him with expressions of dazed delight. Tayris and Weir beamed back at them. Then Tayris nodded his farewell to Detzia and Aelric, tossing the white stone to Weir and quickly stepping through. Weir caught the vessel neatly, steeling himself to depart. "Oh, and Torin," Aelric spoke quietly, a small smile suddenly on his lips, the playful expression out of place on his deathly pale face. "Tell Davian that his stances need some work." He shrugged cheerfully at Weir's puzzled expression, then turned and gave Davian a casual salute through the portal. Davian grinned back, though it was more with bemused happiness than anything else. Weir glanced once again at Detzia, taking a quick last mental image of the woman he loved. Her eyes drank him in as she smiled. He turned and stepped through the hole in the air. The portal winked shut behind him. And then he was being wrapped in a fierce embrace by his friends. Chapter 50 Davian fidgeted as he, Asha, and Caden gazed at the black travel stone expectantly. The rolling plains at the base of the Monoth Mountains were silent, calm, bathed in early morning sunshine. It had been only a minute since Asha had abruptly spoken, though it already seemed like forever. Davian drew a breath, opened his mouth to speak. The stone began to glow. His heart skipped a beat and he leaned forward instead, anticipation and nervousness growing in equal measure as a circle of light formed in the air, spinning and smoothing and widening. And then he could see through it to Weir's battered, grinning face. There was a stunned moment in which no one reacted. Then he and Asha were both yelling and laughing delightedly at the sight, even Caden giving an unexpected whoop of excitement. To Davian's dazed surprise, he could see more familiar faces through the opening.
Dizia and Aelric standing with Weir and Taris just off to the side.
Taris was first through, receiving immediate embraces from both Asha and Caden. Davian grinned as he spotted Aelric, giving him a nod and a cheerful salute, then hesitated for just a moment before walking over and clapping Taris on the shoulder as the other two pulled away.
"Good to see that you're all right," he said, giving the scarred man a small smile.
"You too," Taris said sincerely.
They were interrupted by a blur of motion to the side as Asha all but sprinted to meet Weir, who had finally joined them. Davian turned, Taris forgotten for the moment, as Asha wrapped Weir in a fierce hug.
"Fates, Weir!"
A lump formed in his throat as he hurried forward, he and Caden both joining the embrace.
"You scared us."
"About time it was my turn,"
gasped Weir, exaggerating his inability to breathe due to his friend's grips. Davian snorted, thumping the blonde-haired man firmly on the back as Caden and Asha both laughed. Weir was really here, really still alive. Suddenly, for the first time in as long as he could remember, he found himself unable to stop smiling. Once the initial joy of the reunion subsided, Caden accepted the white stone from Weir, then walked over and picked up the black stone from the ground again, pocketing it.
"Why didn't Dizia and Aelric come?"
"They wanted to, but it's a long story, most of which I don't know."
Weir looked around, clearly not wanting to go into the details.
"Where are we?"
"About half an hour from Dilanus, which is lucky because much closer, and we'd have risked Cassandrid sensing the portal," said Caden, adjusting the torque around his neck that he'd taken from Ilseth Tenvar a few hours earlier. "We need to find him before he knows we're coming."
"You'd think he'd run?"
asked Taris in surprise. Caden held up Lycanius, the morning light bending oddly around the blade.
"He'll run," he said confidently. "It's the smart thing to do. He's stayed patiently behind the Ilshara for 2,000 years, all because the risk of being struck down with Lycanius was too great. He'll be willing to wait a little longer if that's what it takes."
He sheathed Lycanius again, nodding to the west.
"We don't have that luxury. We should get moving. We'll talk on the way."
A jolt of unease shot through Davian at the words, though he ignored it as best he could. According to Caden's assessment, Shemaloth and the Banes from Talon Gol could be less than a day away from reaching Dilanus. Asha's immense power might buy them some time, but ultimately, they had to close the rift before then. Less than a day before he had to go back for the last time. He fell into step with the others, seeing Asha's concerned glance in his direction, but pretending that he hadn't. None of them could afford to dwell on this. He knew that if he did, at least, there was a very real chance that he would change his mind, turn around and head in the opposite direction. He accepted that it had to happen, but he didn't want to die. Despite his efforts to ignore what was coming, he found himself distracted, only half listening as Weir and Taris explained what had happened during the stand against the Desrealites, the mysterious and miraculous appearance of the Neskian army. He didn't contribute much as the flow of information switched either, with Asha and Caden largely relating the trip into Ilshan Gath Del Teth and the retrieval of Lycanius. Davian did give a brief description of his imprisonment, of course, but kept it only to the relevant details. Weir and Taris, perhaps sensing his mood, didn't press. He was grateful for that. So much had happened already since his time in Zavalar, but it had only been hours since he'd said goodbye to his friends there. Had they made it? Caden didn't know, so there was no way to tell now. Raelith, at least, would have lived and died thousands of years ago regardless. The thought was of little comfort. It was Caden who broke the news of Caroline's fate to Weir, though he had told Davian and Asha of it earlier. The subdued ache in his voice showed that explaining it again was by no means any easier. Still, he kept nothing back, quietly laying out the painful truth of just how long Nethgullah had been impersonating the princess, as well as his conclusion that Siner must have covered for Nethgullah during her infiltration of Ilshan Gath Del Teth. Forged reports were one thing.
but too many trustworthy people had claimed to have seen the princess safe and well on her supposed sojourn north. Only an augur could have made that happen. Weir took the revelation and the other's condolences stoically, simply bowing his head as he continued to walk before finally nodding heavily, straightening once again, expression resolute even as his eyes glistened. He quickly moved the conversation on to other matters. His cousin's death and what it meant for Weir's position was a weight that he had clearly decided to try and set aside for now. After a while, Davian found himself walking alongside Tayris, apart from the others, as they talked. He glanced across at the scarred man, who looked pensive, as if composing his thoughts. There was a brief, awkward silence.
"I owe you an apology," said Tayris softly. "And an explanation."
Davian said nothing, though inwardly his chest tightened with a sudden expectant tension. He knew that this was unimportant right now, but he'd wondered about it for so long. His entire life, in fact. It would be nice to know how it had all begun before it ended.
"What Driskin told you about me, back when you met him? It's true," Tayris continued slowly, the words clearly difficult. "All of it."
"So you're the one who left me at Caladel?"
Davian's heart pounded. He looked across at the gifted, suddenly unable to keep the quiet, longing plea from his tone.
"Who were my parents, Tayris?"
Tayris met his gaze, his eyes full of sympathetic sorrow.
"I don't know. I swear by all fate to you, Davian. I would have told you long ago if I knew that."
Tayris's voice was earnest, imploring Davian to understand.
"I knew of you from the augur's visions and Alchesh's writings, and I had been searching for you. I believed that we might be at that point in history, but I didn't find you. You found me."
Davian's expression twisted, confusion mixing with abrupt, creeping disappointment.
"What?"
"I'm sorry. I know it's not what you want to hear, but..."
Tayris looked wretched at not being able to give him more.
"It wasn't long after the treaty had been signed and the schools had been reestablished. I was in the process of organizing to set out to look for you, but we had to finalize some of the details of the tenets. I was staying at the palace for the negotiations. And you... you just appeared in my rooms one evening. A note with your name, telling me to take care of you, and a vessel that was worth a small fortune under the new laws, which I had to give to the guards to convince them not to ask questions."
Davian's shoulders slumped.
"That's it? That's everything?"
He shook his head, part of him refusing to believe that there weren't more answers to be found here. "How did you even know that Davian was really my name?"
"I didn't. In fact, for most of that evening, I assumed that it was all some sort of elaborate prank. The other elders already thought I was obsessed too much over Alchesh, and..."
He shrugged awkwardly.
"But children that young don't exactly go missing without someone noticing. I made all the inquiries I could, and when no one was looking for you, I had to take it all seriously. I had more information about you than anyone alive, at least to the best of my knowledge. And I knew that you would be in danger, that the forces on the other side of the boundary would be afraid of you, if you really were... you."
He stared at the ground as he spoke, the words tumbling out of him now.
"So I volunteered to inspect the schools in the borderlands and took you to Caladel."
Davian hung his head, his last flicker of hope fading. Despite himself, he'd been focusing, and no black smoke had escaped from Tayris's mouth. There hadn't even been a hint of an ache in Davian's forehead, either.
"You chose such an out-of-the-way school," he realized heavily, "in case someone was searching for me."
"The exact same reason Weir got sent there," agreed Tayris, "though that was nothing to do with me."
Davian took a slow, shaky breath, touching the oldest of his scars absently.
And the attack?
Shame clouded Tavris's expression.
I knew what was happening with the boundary, and no one was listening to me, he said softly. And you, I had no way to tell. I was never certain, but every year that passed, I doubted more and more whether you were the one of whom Elchash had spoken, and I needed to know. I needed to start looking elsewhere if it wasn't really you. That doesn't excuse what I did, but it's why.
There was silence after that, Davian feeling empty.
I remember what happened that day now. What I did, he admitted after a while.
He looked over at Tayris tentatively, taking in the terrible mass of lines on his face. At least one of them looked angry, fresh.
Your scars. Are they my fault?
They are my fault, said Tayris firmly. But yes, the connection you made that day did linger. It has caused me some pain, but it is also what allowed me to find you in Desrael. It's what let me be sure you were still alive when I would have had no other way of knowing. So there have been benefits. And the cost. The cost is something I deserved.
Still, I could try and stop. We have more important things to worry about.
Tayris smiled as he shook his head, softening the words.
Besides, if we get separated, there's a chance that knowing where you are could still help.
Davian reflected for a while longer, then inclined his head. There was another silence, but this one was easier somehow. A little sadder, perhaps, but less fraught. He might not have found the answers he'd wanted, but for the first time it felt like the air had been cleared between them.
Why not simply tell me?
Davian asked eventually. There was no judgment in his tone now, just genuine curiosity. Tayris sighed.
Pride, embarrassment, worry that my admitting to my mistakes would set you against me no matter how much I wanted to help. Though in hindsight, trying to cover them up was a worse move by far.
He gestured.
I always thought you had been left to my care, and when you came to Desrael, I thought it was fate. I thought it was my responsibility to guide you, to make sure that you fulfilled Alchesh's visions.
He smiled tiredly.
Sometimes it's hard to see the extent of your vanity until it's too late.
Davian accepted the explanation reluctantly.
And that's all there is? Everything you can tell me?
Yes.
Davian said nothing for a few moments, then took a deep breath, giving Tayris a small smile.
Thank you anyway, he said quietly. I'm glad I heard that before.
He trailed off, gazing westward toward Dylanus. Tayris studied him.
It's my pleasure to finally give you the truth. I'm sorry it took so long, he said sincerely. Asha told us about what might be coming, about you going back in time again. Are you certain?
I've seen it myself.
Pained, pent-up heat leaked into Davian's voice as he cut Tayris off, despite his best efforts. He didn't want to discuss this. Didn't want to have to think about it.
Caden remembers it, and the rift won't close with me around anyway. Besides, it fits. It fits with what you and Naim and Layman have thought all along. I'm the one who Alchesh foresaw. I'm the one who stops our kind evade. This is just how I have to do it, he finished bleakly.
He didn't mention how unfair it felt. He didn't add how Caden's memory haunted him, and how even the briefest thought of it turned his blood to ice, tempted him to turn and run with every step closer they came to Dylanus. He didn't tell Tayris how desperately he wanted to live. Tayris considered for a moment, and then gave a single, solemn nod. There was respect in the motion, but a heartfelt sorrow, too. "Have you ever actually read any of Alchesh's writings?" he asked, shifting the subject. Davian shook his head. He'd never even heard of Alchesh until he'd met Tayris, and there had been nothing of the First Augur's writings in Tol Shen's library. Unsurprising, given their connection, however weak, to the old religion.
"His visions are funny things," Tayris said as they walked, the clean heat of the morning beating down on their backs. "The ones from before his madness are very specific, detail-oriented, like the ones you might find in the modern Augur's journal. But those ones all clearly came to pass within 100 years of his seeing them."
He scratched his head.
"The rest read like fever dreams. They are vague and violent and given to strange flights of poetry, almost. Strange, unsettling imagery. Their interpretation is difficult enough that even amongst those of us who believe that they hold important information, there is plenty of argument as to which of them might point to events that have happened between his time and ours. Only one thing is clear, really, based on the language, and that is that they all refer to events that were in Alchesh's future."
"So you're saying that you might have been wrong now?"
"No," said Tayris patiently. "I'm saying that Alchesh didn't go mad until after he helped raise the boundary. And unless my history is off, that was after Dilanus was destroyed. He foresaw you stopping our kind of aid after you died, Davian."
He glanced over at Caden, who was deep in conversation with the other two.
"To my mind, that part of the visions has already been fulfilled. Even with his memories back, I see more of you in him than ever. Your death might be the spark, but it's you.